Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, the Minister for Education and TD for Kerry, Norma Foley, is here in the studio. You're very welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Claire.
Now, you're announcing changes to the Leaving Cert grading system this morning. This is tied into the measures taken during COVID, because we had grades boosted by around 8% last year, and that system's going to continue for those sitting there Leaving Cert this year in 2024. But changes are coming. 2025, what's happening?
Yes, you're quite correct, Claire. And I suppose the most important thing to say for those who are sitting Leaving Cert at the moment, that it is exactly the same. It will stay the same this year as it was last year. And you're correct. I suppose we need to go back and look at the experience during COVID. And so during COVID, we know schools were closed. All of society was closed, really. But at that time, we needed to find a pathway forward for Leaving Certificate students so that they would have a certification that would allow them to have a passport into further in higher education, the world of work, whatever it was that they chose to do. And so at that time, the decision was made to provide calculated grades for them, and that really meant that the teacher provided an estimated grade for them in cooperation with the other subject teachers and the principal, and that was provided for the students, and that was their Leaving Certificate. Then following that, we had the accredited grades, and we also had an opportunity for students to sit the seated exam as normal, and that they could choose between whichever grades benefited them the most. And at that time, it meant that there was an increase in and around 7% in the grade profile, or the grades achieved, in comparison to what was achieved before COVID, we'll say, in 2019. And I gave a commitment that, you know, that grade profile would remain in place as we were journeying through COVID. And I also gave the commitment, in the interest of fairness to the students, that there would be no cliff edge then when we needed to return to normality. So what I'm saying today is that everything remains in place for the class of 2024. And the reason it remains in place for the class of 2024 is because they are the last cohort of students that didn't have an opportunity to sit or to take a junior cycle exam.
They didn't have a formal exam.
They didn't have the formal exam.
When you say there's no cliff edge, and I do understand, you'll explain the tapering, but there is a cliff edge, isn't there, for the people in 2025? Because if I was sitting my exam now in 2024, I might say to myself, well, I am going to be the last one now to benefit from the inflated grade, so I won't apply for college until 2025. I'll be up against those people who are going to experience the harsher regime, if you like, and have a better chance of getting in.
But you see, when you look at it, what we're talking about for 2025 is we're saying it's in and around, we'd say the 7% on average would have been the grade inflation.
Yeah.
We're saying in 2025 that will hit around 5.5%. So that's like a 1.5% almost difference, and that's the maximum. Might be actually lower than that. There does come a point where we do have to come back to normality. Other jurisdictions have gone probably full tilt and, you know, held back on their 7% all in one go, or did a greater chunk of, you know, 4% or whatever they did. But I don't think that's fair or right to the students. So I think a very tapered, very slow, very gradual return to normality is what we have to do.
Why do we have to do it?
Yeah, we do have to do it because there comes a point where, you know, if we look at 2019, if we look at the achievement of students in 2019 compared to what the concessions that they were given during COVID, I think in the interest of fairness and in the interest of accuracy in an exam, it has to be comparative. And so what we're saying is it will be very gradual. It will be a tapered reduction over a number of years. The accommodations that students are given in terms of assessment, they will remain in place. That means, we'll say, for example, greater choice on the paper. It also means, and it's an important one that's raised with me, with students right across the country around the Sra Picturi, you know, for their oral Irish exams, that was reduced from 20 to 10. That will remain in place also for 2025.
And there are no plans to change any of those things?
No, they will all remain in place for 2025. And everything is reviewed then subsequently. You know, and as I say, other jurisdictions went full tilt back immediately at a much greater percentage. But we chose not to do that in the best interest of the students. It will be slow. It will be gradual. But it's a return to normality in terms of.
But there
of
could
grade.
Be a new normal, could there not? Could there not? Could we not stay at the inflated grade so that nobody is disadvantaged? And I know you say that this is a tapering, but there will be some disadvantage for some people in 2020.
But again, just to say, what does that look like really? So that means that once a student goes in and takes their exam, there is after the leaving certificate, then there is what's called a post-marking adjustment. So their achievement, whatever they achieve in the exam, is adjusted
upwards.
Exactly, by 7%. And we're saying now that will hit around the 5.5%. So it's a, you know, to get the accurate reflection of the student, we need to return to a situation where you won't have that post-marking adjustment. That's the nature of it.
Is the problem happening at third level when those people with the inflated grades are going in onto courses that perhaps mightn't suit them or that they mightn't be academically able for?
Well, again, I'd have to say to you, I know that there's a strong view from others in a variety of different sectors that we should go full tilt and go back almost immediately to what was, we'd say, the grade achievement or the grade profile in 2019.
That view's at third level, is it?
Well, many. I'm not saying everybody, but many have that view. That is not my view. I mean, if it were my daughter or my son taking the leaving certificate in any given year, I would want the maximum of fairness for them. Equally so, if I were teaching and in the classroom now, that's also what I would want. So that's why it's a very slow, very gradual return to normality. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fair. We're seeing society now return to normality. We're seeing, we speak of ourselves in terms of being post-COVID. So our exam situation needs to return at that slow pace as well. And as I
I'm
say,
sure
others,
you've discussed, though, with your officials, the potential for a legal challenge here on this, because if even one child is disadvantaged, they would have a right to say to you, look, my chances of going forward onto the course that I wanted post my leaving cert in 2025 were damaged by this decision to taper down.
Well, again, I have to say to you, right from the outset when we did this, and again, I'm going to say to you, there was a lot of mixed views at the time as to whether we should, you know, some people were very clear at the time that the grade inflation at 7% was far, far too high, should not have been done, should not have been allowed. But I felt in the best interest of the students, again, and this was a shared view, that, you know, we needed to take cognizance of the fact that their learning was disrupted, the fact, we'll say, that many of them didn't get the opportunity to sit a state exam. Mm-hmm. So that was done in terms of fairness. But fairness also means that there has to be a return to normality. And look, different people will take different views as to, like, I know there's a strong view that we should go greater than the 5.5, you know, that 5.5%, we should come down lower than that again. So be it. It is my view that this is the fairest system, that this is a system where we are by degrees very slowly returning to normality and maintaining the, I suppose, the accommodations that they also currently have on the papers.
And you have taken legal advice on doing this,
Examined this inside out, upside down, as regards the variety of options. This is the fairest option that's on the table currently. And could I say one other thing just about the class of 2024? I should also say that today we're confirming that the leaving certificate results will be issued on the 23rd of August.
You've been given a guarantee on that, have you?
Because
there was some controversy on it last year. And there was some controversy as well for the junior certs who really had a very long wait.
Yeah, but again, I just have to say, you know, in terms of the date, and I want to acknowledge the work that the State Examination Commission do, that they do have the authority over the exams, they run the exams, and they do so with enormous authority. But we're now in a situation at Leaving Certificate where the students take the Leaving Certificate exam. There is a second sitting of a Leaving Certificate, which was unheard of in my time, but again, something that came out of COVID and recognising that it is fairer to students. And at the end of the day, that must always be our primary aim. So fairer to students, that there would be a second opportunity if a medical issue arose, if there was a bereavement, whatever. So there's now a second sitting of the Leaving Certificate exam. And remember, when both sets of the Leaving Certificate exams are concluded, there is now, what we didn't have prior to COVID, the post-marking adjustment to ensure that the grades are at a level or at a profile similar to throughout COVID. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of change and a lot of flux, if you like, for the state examinations here. And I think it's quite an achievement that every year they've managed to draw it back and back and back closer to what would have been.
And this
prior
year
to
confirm, it's the 23rd of
That's right,
August.
Friday
That's
the 23rd.
The guaranteed
Friday the 23rd
date.
Of August. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And just in terms of the junior cycle, just to say as well, confirmation today has been provided for the students at Junior Start that the accommodations that were provided for them during COVID remain in place for 2025 and 2026. That's particularly around and those who have children doing this, they will know all about it. It's where they have to do a classroom-based assessment that they will just have. We reduce the number that were required there, that will stay in place. So we're given that clarity today as well for 25.
But no clarity on the results date for junior cert.
Well, I just to be clear around that for the junior students, that always comes after the leaving certificate is completed.
Yeah, but you'll remember the controversy around it when I think it did stretch into, you know, in, almost into the winter last year where people were waiting and
no,
really
that was
had
the previous year. There was a significant achievement last year in bringing it back. But again, it was because
in previous... Is there any certainty around the date for them this time?
Well, again, it will be, I would assume, and again, that's the matter for the State Examination Commission, and I will be engaging with them in relation to that. That will be, they will be able to make a clear adjudication once the leaving certificate is completed, once the exams issue. But probably more important for them is where, depending on the number of students who come forward at leaving certificate who need, you know, the papers to be reassessed, you know, they're entitled to ask for a second judgment or a second correction of the papers.
So the junior cert will all depend on what happens with
on
the
how many
cert.
Exactly.
Because it's really important to have your results if you're choosing subjects.
Absolutely.
And you're choosing levels
yep.
to study at.
Yep.
And if that is delayed, yep. then it pushes out yep. those decisions.
And again, I just want to say, you know, that prior to COVID, you know, there had been a change in the system, and that was as a consequence really of a legal case that involved the department around the availability of students who asked for their papers to be corrected a second time and how long that was taken. So there is now a commitment that it has to be done within a particular time frame after the leaving cert has been set. So that has had a knock-on impact in terms of the availability of the junior mm-hmm. cycle results, because a lot of teachers who correct one correct the other. And so in 2019, the junior cycle results were mid-October, and that's the target, that's what we would be talking about okay. here now as well for the junior students.
Let's discuss this meeting that you organised with the big tech companies. You wanted to discuss with them age verification. This mm-hmm. is very much in the news at the moment again
Indeed.
This week. Meta went along, they own Instagram and Facebook,
right.
TikTok,
yes.
but X, Amazon, Snapchat, Netflix, they all didn't show up. I mean, now that they've snubbed that meeting, would you say Simon Harris should say to them, you need to come and see me about this?
Look, I think there is, and I'm really, really pleased to see that this is a discussion that's in the public domain and it is not before time. We within the department have been doing a huge body of work around this, particularly working with parents. And it is for that reason, you know, I did extend the invitation. Those that did turn up, I told them that they had, you know, enormous and extraordinary power in terms of, you know, interaction with young people, in my instance, but indeed others as well. But they also had extraordinary responsibility. And particularly around areas of age verification, which was something that I raised with them. The area, and I know it was raised last night on the RTE primetime programme, and I didn't get to see that because I was on the floor with all doing oral questions, but it was around, you know, the algorithm and how it can push a particular agenda on young people. So I raised that with them as well. But I didn't feel that they were forthcoming in terms of taking individual. I believe the individual platforms need to take individual responsibility. So I said then, as I will say now, that, you know, we do have Commissioner Na Mban. There are very strong regulation there. It can be up to €20 million. It can be 20% of their worldwide profit. And I think we have to take that strong arm, if you like, if they're not going to cooperate. But for our part in the department, we are currently working with parents. We are providing information to parents around, in particular at primary school, we're focusing on the use of smartphones. We're encouraging them not to deny on a permanent basis, but to defer, we'll say, the purchase of a smartphone.
I have seen that. You know,
yeah.
I've seen that in my own life, where there is that encouragement there not to allow a phone for your primary school child.
Mm-hmm.
There are loads of people in school, in primary school, I know, who have phones.
Absolutely.
It's not really working. You know, it's kindly saying to them, will you please consider not buying your child a phone before they get into first year. It just doesn't work.
Well, again, I just have to say to you, you're correct. There are, now, in fairness, I do want to acknowledge in the schools, every school has a phone policy.
They're trying, but when it's voluntary, it's just really difficult.
But this is within the school I'm talking about now, specifically within the school. I don't I truly feel and I experience that it is not an issue in the day to day within the school, mm-hmm. but it is an issue after school hours, you know. And what we are doing for our part is, and I recognise that ultimately parents do have the responsibility and they do have the autonomy to make the decision, or guardians. So what we're doing is we're in a space where we're saying, we'll provide the information to you. We will share with you what we're getting from, we'll say, the from Cuma Sheu na Mban. And I've met with the Commissioner, Niamh Hodnett, and she is telling us that young children, 7, 8, 9 and 10, who do have the smartphone in their hand, there is now what they refer to as self-generated detail or data that is being shared online. Children are being groomed, so there's an adult posing as a child, and children in turn are sharing material that no parent or guardian would want them to share. So that level of abuse, that level of danger is out there. Mm-hmm. And
doesn't
it
say a lot, though, about those companies that they won't even come to the meeting, though, with you?
Well, again, I suppose what I can say to you, and look, there is a wider body of work here, I think, as well, in terms of Cuma Sheu na Mban. Absolutely, we invited them in. But I'm very clear, and as I said to those that were there, and indeed to those that aren't there, if you don't play ball, I think we're in a space now where society is demanding that they play ball in terms of protecting, in particular, young people. Cuma Sheu na Mban will have the regulation. They will fine you. You will be hauled before them. You will have to pay your 20 million euro or your 20% of your worldwide profits. Society will not stand for this. I think much of this happened where people, you know, embraced the opportunity that's provided by technology. And I embrace it myself. I can see the extraordinary advantage to it. But I can also see with advantage and opportunity comes extraordinary responsibility.
And what, and you, got, the platforms, what you got was arrogance, though, and rudeness not to attend a meeting with the Minister for Education. It's unacceptable.
Well, I suppose you issue an invitation and there's a freedom to accept or not accept. Mm. But either way, we're moving on with our own agenda. Yeah. And as I say, we will work to inform parents so that parents will make informed decisions. We have seen it work. And I want to be clear, we have seen it work in communities around the country. Is it working in every community? No, it's not. So we're working through our education centres. We're providing online meetings for parents. We're inviting them into education centres. We're giving them the option. We're telling them, here's the information. Now you choose. You decide to do with this information what you will. That's our role within education.
The Oireachtas Committee on Children was discussing this yesterday, mm-hmm. and Fine Gael's Michael Creed says that legislators need to get much, much, much more aggressive on this, in particular when it comes to age verification. Mm-hmm. Are you agreeing with that, or are you saying we've given Cuma Sheu na Mban the powers they need to do what they're set up to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a marriage of both, and I think it is important that we do have Cuma Sheu na Mban. And that they do have the teeth to do what they need to do.
So what is it that legislators need to do then?
But equally so, just on the other side of it, I think there is a responsibility from the platforms to do what needs to be done. You know, so they have a responsibility, Cuma Sheu na Mban have a responsibility, and that's regulation that has been, you know, that has been brought in by Minister Martin. And if we need to go further, we will go further. But we're giving an opportunity now for all sides to come to the table in the best interests of young people. If they don't, they're, as I say, the Cuma Sheu na Mban, financial implications. And if we need to do more in this space, we will do more.
OK, I want to ask you briefly about a couple of things with my eye on the clock here. So we have free school books for children up to junior cert now at second level. We had principals on here saying this is a great idea. Mm-hmm. We're delighted with it. But there's so much admin work. We're not sure that we can get it in on time. Are you worried about that, that that's going to happen?
Yeah. Look, I suppose really, every single day, the important thing in education is that every child has an equal access and an equal opportunity. And in my experience, that is made so much easier for parents in terms of costs when we do have initiatives like the free school books. It has rolled itself out very successfully at primary school, and we put additional resources in there. But I want to say very clearly, very easy for the minister to put the finances in place. It's a very different thing for the school to roll it out. And I want to acknowledge the enormous work that's done on the ground every day. But to make that happen in primary, we gave additional days to the school. We're doing likewise at post-primary. So to the post-primary schools, we're saying to the principals, we will give you a variety of days, whether it's 10, 13 or 16, depending on the on the size of your school.
Of admin support, is it?
Of days that you can use to bring somebody additional in to manage the rollout of the free school books. But I know the real issue for them is around procurement.
Yes.
Because procurement...
They've explained that to us.
It is a challenge. So we have... provided additional staff into a section within our own department. We are telling the schools that that section is available to support them in terms of whether it's, and the phone helpline is there and it's live now, whether it's live webinars, whether it's email support.
So the support, we will do, the support is there. So are you
in addition to the 10, 13 or 16 days that they will also have.
And are you saying to parents that that free book, school book scheme will be in place for everybody up to junior cert in September, despite the challenges that the principals say they're facing?
Yeah, and again, look, I don't underestimate the challenge for principals, and that's why, as I said, we've increased staffing into a section within the department. We will work with the individual schools. Anything that is new can be challenging and daunting, but we have seen how successfully it has worked at primary school and the benefit of it to parents and to children. And we see likewise, we will see likewise at post-primary. So where schools or where principals have specific issues, we're asking them to engage with the department in the variety of different means that are available there. This is in the best interest of the students ultimately.
Okay, something that your department is doing in conjunction with the Department of Social Protection is the hot school meals. And we've been talking about this on the programme and it is welcomed by very many people. Yep. But we did have a principal on here and she said in one hand she's holding an electricity bill for 2,400 and she sees this service coming in which is probably costing per week the same amount, and she was saying if I had that money to do the things I need to do in this school I'd be in a much better place. Do you think, given as well that we're hearing a lot about food waste, that it is the right use of resources?
I absolutely feel it's the right thing to do in terms of ensuring that a child has access to food while they're in school. I visit schools the length and breadth of the country. I have worked in schools for all of my professional life, and I know the advantage that it is to a child when they know that they have food available to them. They study better, they're more alert, they're sharper in the classroom, and it is a duty of care. So I'm very, very supportive of this. I think it's a real positive. You know, we have hundreds of thousands of students availing of this. In terms of principals and the money that goes into a school, look, the principal's job is not an easy one. I know that. And then I would say likewise, you know, across all sectors, more and more is being demanded in the world of education and within school communities. But in terms of funding, I can say to you, you know, we've recently just announced an additional 80 million going into schools, whether that's for, you know, minor works or ICT grants. I can tell you that we've increased the capitation. That's the money that's given to each individual student in a school. So, for example, a 700 pupil school at post-primary will receive between their ancillary grant and capitation in and around 400,000. And separate to that, then, the department will pay salaries, they will pay the minor works and everything else.
So the school should have enough money.
Well, so what I'm saying to you is there is significant money going into the schools, but I recognise every individual school has individual demands, and we have a dedicated unit within the Department of Education, the FSSU, it's a financial support services unit, and we're saying to individual schools, if you have an individual issue, if there's an individual problem, engage with the department and we will work through your individual issues. Look, principals do marvellous work every single day, as do the entire school community. The department wants to walk the journey with them and support them. So if you're having specific issues around any finances, we ask you to work with the department and make direct contact with the FSSU.
Minister, we'll leave it there, but thank you very much for coming in. That's Minister Norma Foley. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.